Dr. J Interviews is a collection of candid conversations with good Black professional men regarding life and career choices. I'm your host, Dr. J McCarthy.
I'd like to welcome to the show another really good friend of mine, Mr. James Tony. How you doing today, brother?
Hey, what's up, bro? I'm good, man. How about you?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm alive, man. You know, that's something to say right now.
Yes, sir, man. Another day above ground. Definitely a blessing, bro. I feel you.
I'm going to share with the audience a little bit later how we ended up finding each other, but go ahead and just dive right into the interview. So what do you do for a living?
Well, right now, man, I'm a programmer, so IT programmer. We do a lot of front-end development, some back-end development, and that's information technology. I work in the financial sector right now, so I'm supporting just that industry of, you know, finances, banking, anything related to credit cards, mortgages, and those types of core industries. So we do a lot of, like I say, reporting and just program development, front-end program development for that industry.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
It's going on about 7-8 years now.
Okay. So for your job, what kind of degrees are required?
Well, it kind of varies. You get in the technical space these days, and degrees are, you know, hit and miss. But in the beginning, when I first got into it, there was just the basic undergraduate degree. So computer science, that core computer science curriculum is always beneficial. But I've seen other backgrounds get in. I actually worked with a guy that had a psychology background. So it's really just about, you know, having a logical mindset, a logical thinking approach to the work that you're doing. You know, you're getting into coding, and you have to be able to think through objects and step processes. So I would say computer science at a core, but, you know, I wouldn't say it's limited to that or even necessary in most cases, because experience can also fill that educational gap in a lot of situations. So it's just about being able to sell yourself, get through the interview and the testing processes to prove that you're capable, and pretty much, you know, get in there that way as well.
Now, I'm asking a lot of these questions. I actually work in IT, so I'm kind of familiar with that. But I kind of want to step people through who may not be familiar. You know, there's tons of certifications. For what you do, are there certifications that can help you in your particular field in IT?
I'm sure some of them probably emerged. I know back when I was going through my undergraduate degree, there were the core ones like the Cisco certifications, Microsoft System Admin certification, and things like that. But I didn't really get into the system admin world, so more of that hardware back-end management side. So I don't know, per se, and what we do. We do a lot of development and reporting applications. So, you know, you think about Microsoft SQL Server, then other robust front-end platforms like Tableau, Power BI, and then some other Microsoft platforms as well. I'm sure there are certifications out there, but to answer your question, no. I don't believe they're required. I do probably believe there are some, I guess, organizations that would have that as a prerequisite, you know, potentially. But just to get into the field, you know, we live in the world of YouTube and, you know, online learning now too. So I believe, you know, that knowledge can be gained apart from certification. So, you know, that leads me to say that I don't believe it's required. It wasn't for me anyway.
That leads to something interesting. Well, two-part question on that. One, can you kind of give people a range that some of these certifications cost? And two, like you said, I think this is a little bit different from the era when we started, because you do have like YouTube. My job, they used to have a subscription to Lynda, LYNDA.com, which has like a plethora of information from website building to anything you can kind of think of there. Do you have any suggestions for online learning outside of like YouTube and Lynda? Do you know of any sites that might be good for people to kind of see if that's something that we'll be interested in?
Yeah, for sure, man. There's, man, like innumerable amount. The ones that I had experience with and, you know, good experience are through my job and just offline. One is Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y. Coursera, I believe, is another one. Degreed is also a good platform. And thinking just in this space, in the IT space, man, there's so many startups and possibly even nonprofits that have popped up where you can go in and get this online training. Now, cost-wise, I think it varies. You know, you could look at a small nominal amount monthly, somewhere around $5 a month to gain access to these programs and these learning sessions. I mean, all the way up to a couple $100, you know, maybe a month or a year. I think it just depends on, you know, what you're actually looking to get into, what you're actually trying to learn, how deep you're trying to go with it, how far you want to take it. And then what I've seen emerge in the last few years is using Groupon. I find that a lot of organizations, they'll get on there and promote their organization, I guess, just in that marketing sense, again, that this part of the world that we live in now. But you can go on there and get some discounted rates for some really good, even actual certifications. Wow. So, industry recognized type certifications that you can go through and trainings that you can go through that will set you up, that will, you know, I think most of us want to save as much as we can these days. So saving you some money, but also getting you that same quality learning experience. So those are a few. Just trying to think on the fly. I don't know of any other major one. You know, Khan Academy is big out there. I don't know how much specific IT training you have there. I know they do a lot of coding, you know, and that's a big boom right now. You can get, like say, coding pretty much anywhere. You just do a quick Google search, and I'm sure you'll get, you know, I don't even want to put a number on the pages. You could probably return, but again, it's so much that's out there. But some of the core ones that are around, there, some of those that I named, I know they're proven, and Linda too, that you had mentioned. I know they're proven and solid. They have a lot of professional experts that are, you know, doing those trainings. People that have just been doing that, or actually even certified in doing that. So those would, you know, probably be the best places to start. And I'm sure they offer some type of free trial to get you going and make sure you like what you were seeing and the learning experience there.
I actually, on accident, stumbled upon a site called Meetup, and I noticed that there were a lot of Black coders on there. And these are groups. Meetup, for you guys who don't know, it's like a place where people like mine can meet up for various things. But they have a lot of, you know, Black men coding groups that you can look for. IT, they do just various free training, so a pretty good resource too.
That's interesting.
What would you say that the range, and I've seen some, but tell our listeners a range for some of these certifications out there.
They can get on up there. Again, it just depends because there's so many. You get into the IT world, right? You have the actual hardware certifications that you're looking at. Like I say, Cisco, those Microsoft System Admin, which is kind of mixed hardware and software, knowing how to operate the systems, really gets into that, I guess, another level of knowledge. But I've seen them in a couple $100 to a few $1,000s. I mean, that's going to be the range. You look at culminating that between how many you want, you know, having to renew them if there's a renewal period. So definitely having, I guess, some type of budget in mind. It's not going to be free, that's for sure, because essentially it would give you, you're almost trading that, in most cases, I won't say always, but you're trading that for that standard degree, that piece of paper, you know, that most people want, or in lieu of experience that you may have or may not be able to get. So, like I say, I've seen them, I want to say, and this was, you know, back when I did my undergrad, so we're looking at almost 7-8 years now. But yeah, a few $100s to potentially a few $1,000s, and then some type of recurring or renewal fee as well.
You know, I think that's going to be a common theme among any kind of career path that you have. You're going to have some kind of a continuing ed. I call them continuing ed credits. Mm-hmm. You're going to have something to kind of keep your certification up to date. But along those same lines, it may be expensive, but can you tell people or share with them what's a salary range for programmers? Just give them a ballpark for someone starting off and what the potential growth is.
Yeah, man, it's really wide open nowadays, you know, because everything is digital. So there are a few factors. What industry are you getting into? So, you know, like I said, I work in financial, but I know there's so many others. So just industrial, you know, I mean, the list just goes on. I think it just depends on what your actual tasks are going to be for that organization and what they can afford, you know, what their capital looks like. But on the low end, you're probably looking at around 50 grand a year, somewhere in that range. Maybe a little lower, just depending, again, on certification experience or degree. And then on the high end, I mean, it really, I don't want to put a limit on that. I mean, I would say a couple hundred or thousand a year. I mean, on the really high end, because you're thinking about actual IT managers, people that are running entire information technology departments at a major organization or corporation, you know, for instance. I mean, you get into maybe 300,000 a year potentially there, but you know, the level of responsibility is what I learned. The level of responsibility is always going to increase. So, you know, if you get in there on the low end, you know, you may be some type of junior developer where you're really just responsible for the task that your team gives you. But as you move through, you're going to, you know, be expected to be more of that self-starter, more of that go-getter where you can do things and take initiative because of, again, your experience, your tenure, and do things that are kind of outside of the box and that are, a little bit out of the norm of just what's expected, you know what I mean? So, or what you were hired for and what they say you're, you know, you go through your job applications or the overview of a role and you'll see, you know, requirements and those nice to haves. But, again, as you get through those levels of income, it'll be dependent on, you know, your work ethic, what you're capable of doing apart from specific direction from, you know, leadership or even other peers on your teams or in your world, wherever you are.
Okay. So as a Black man, what would you say, if any, were any barriers that you had in this career path?
Well, just that one, man. Like you said, I was interested to hear that you said, there's those groups of Black coders. To be honest with you, man, let me be real. Yeah, before I met you, I didn't know any other Black men in information technology. I mean, that's the God's honest truth, man, because it's just something that, for me, it's something that I hadn't seen. I mean, online, anywhere, I hadn't seen it, man. So a barrier, I think, is if you have that desire, it's like where are your resources? Being able to access those resources or just be aware of those resources is one of the barriers that I see. Like I say, it was something I always wanted to do, but it just came natural. I was kind of born and came to maturity in the age of the internet. So, you know, I think it was common for some people my age to be caught up in that. But as far as like having somebody, you know, to walk with you or to kind of point you in the right direction in this particular field, That was probably the main barrier because, again, there's just not many Black guys that do it, man, honestly. And then more so women, right? I mean, even so, you know, people of color, period. What I see, the majority is not even, you know, Caucasian or white people, man. It's really an Indian environment, you know what I mean? And I say that not just people from, you know, India, but, you know, Middle East, I guess I would say, or in that area, more of an Eastern field. And, you know, I know it's not the case across the board, but just like, say, from my experience, the organizations I work for, the people I've encountered, they haven't looked like me. And so I would say that's probably the major barriers, you know, since there is not that representation that's clearly visible or available, the resources and the access into this world is not as easy as it may be for some others.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I kind of stumbled into IT. We talked offline. James is a good buddy of mine. And I stumbled into it. I was in high school. I went to a co-op high school and we selected I forget what they called them. It's kind of like a major. So we had like drafting, automotive, et cetera, et cetera. And I went into electronics and it was just in the hood and they didn't really pair you with jobs you were supposed to get. So I ended up working for computing and technology for the city, for the inner city. And the 2 weeks that I had to work, and one of the young brothers was there. He was a Black man and he was he got his degree. He went to HBCU, local one in town, Central State. And he went for computer programming. And that was my first introduction to it. You know, and he was telling me, this was years ago, I'm aging myself, but this is a very lucrative path. He's like, but you don't see many of us in it. And I went different career paths, but I ended up coming back to it. And he's right. I mean, I see the same. I've worked contract before and I see the same thing you see. Can you take me through like a typical day? This Mr. Tony wakes up and then what?
Yeah, man. So just kind of give you some context. We have 5 kids. I know I'm not in your world yet, but you know, so it's busy.
You getting there, brother?
Yeah, I know, man. We're trying to see how it's gonna work out, man. One day at a time. But yeah, man. So I wake up, and man, my faith is everything to me, man. So always, you know, I know you had made an emphasis on mind, body, and spirit, man. That's critical. So I'm trying to get up and just get my mind right in the right space, because you don't know what that day's bringing. You got kids, you got life. So getting up, getting your mind right, and preparing everything, but then moving into what's going on for that day. So right now, everybody's, I think, working from home. But for us and my team, a lot of what we do has always been capable of being completed remotely. So everything is home. I don't have to, you know, worry about getting up and having to leave the house and, you know, getting dressed and sitting in traffic and all of that. Right now, anyway, that's one of the key pieces. And I think the flexibility is a big aspect of what we do. So getting up and just getting to the computer, right? Once everything is kind of set and I feel prepared, there is some, you know, physical things that I'll do. Again, mental things. I'm just having some quiet time with myself, trying to get, you know, just again, my mind in that right space so that I can function as a leader. And then I'm not saying that in the sense of, you know, I'm some type of manager at work or anything, you know, though there may be some that do, but as men, and especially as Black men with families, right, that's our calling, right? I mean, that's what we've been blessed to have the opportunity to do, is, you know, have wives and children. So we are the leaders. We're all leaders in the sense that we can take initiative and responsibility, ownership of the responsibility that we've been given. So again, that's a lot of my preparation first thing in the morning, is trying to make sure my mind is in the right space to, you know, be able to define what that task list looks like that day, define what's important, what's priority. Getting everything ready to be able to just be there. So that typical day, like say, is getting up, doing those things, and then just getting to work. Essentially, our kids are homeschooled, so a lot of that flexibility is beneficial in that regard. I can work, but also be there for them as well, to kind of support my wife and the things they're doing. So it's always active around here. But again, just making sure that I'm accessible is the main thing. Not only, like I say, for work, but, you know, again, we still have those families that we have to support. So my situation is a little unique. I think I'm not in everybody's house, you know what I mean? So I don't know how it is. And I know right now, I think that's the norm for everybody anyway. Everybody's home, so it may be a little stir crazy, but for us, a normal day is just that, man. Me working, the kids working, being here, kind of doing those life lessons as I can. I may have calls and things throughout the day, and, you know, the kids may have to take, you know, a little backseat to that at that moment. But, you know, once those things are done, I can always pull back and step away and get back to them for a few minutes as well. And then it's about, that normally runs from about, I'm up normally 4 or 5, and kids are usually going about 8. So I'm working probably 7 to 8. Once they're up, I'm helping where I can. And then I'm back to work probably about 9. And we do that all day, usually around 4 or 5. And that's the background. And then we get back to the family in the evenings.
That's all right, man. And just for our listeners, I want to mention, we are doing this interview at 5 a.m., right? So I do believe that there's a lot tied into getting up early, getting your mind right, meditation, you know, starting your day off right. So it ties into productivity. Yep. What's the favorite part about what you do?
The flexibility. That's got to be it, man, because I've worked a lot of jobs. So I'm not too old, but I've had some experience, and I worked a lot of jobs where, man, it's very rigid. You know, schedules are very rigid, man. You got to get up, you know, military, for instance, get up at 4, but, you know, you have your time where you can, you know, be in prayer and be in just meditation mode, but then it's hit it all day. But here, man, like I said, I have that flexibility where even though I'm up early and I know I got to get to work, I'm not on these strict, rigid timelines. I have a long-term timeline and I know what I'm working towards, but I can manage my day how I see fit. So if the kids have doctor's appointments or I have other things that are going on throughout the day, I can manage that around my work and not be, you know, let's say, so restricted to holding to a set schedule, so to speak. You know, when people make the statement, a 9 to 5, you know, that's not always the case. If that's how I'm able to work that day, then great, but I'm not, you know, bound by that. So the flexibility is something that's unmatched. Again, it's just maybe the environment that we support with what we do. But from my experience, man, that flexibility is something that, I guess I just can't speak enough about that. Then the only other thing would be that which I guess is similar to just kind of the freedom to make your own choices about, you know, what work you want to do today, and how you get it done. Nobody's holding your hand and telling you how to go step 1, 2, 3, and you know, you're going to get to this goal. No, here's your goal. You determine how to best achieve that. And if you need feedback, you'd be open to communicate to those that you need help from, or, you know, you use our best friend, the internet, to get help. And, you know, like I say, so two F's, flexibility and freedom are the big things that I enjoy.
I like the fact you said use the internet. I have this running joke. My father wasn't around when I was growing up, and I always say that Google is my daddy. I go to Google when I have any kind of questions about life. I put in my notes, it was just kind of ironic, the flexibility of working in IT. I was going to pivot to that, but it's like you said, it's really helpful when you have large families. How much of your day do you spend actually is it a creative programming, or are you pretty much problem solving, looking at code of stuff that already exists?
It varies. It's a little of both. And like that, that gets back to that flexibility. It's not always the same thing. Like I used to work in, like a shipping factory where they processed orders for various companies. And I work on an assembly line, right? So you're doing the same thing for 8 hours, 12 hours. It's not like that. Some days I may be writing code from scratch, writing actual reporting applications from scratch, man, from all the way from the back end, from the data source, all the way to the front end report visuals that are, you know, being deployed to the website. And then some days it's review of things that are existing. So in my field, in my job, we rotate on call. So our team consists of about, now we're down to about 4 developers, but we rotate on call each week. So we'll be on call for a week, and that's supporting any applications or reporting solutions that we've deployed. So if something breaks, if data processes that we've automated aren't working properly, or, you know, something hiccups in those processes, and we're responsible for going in, checking those, you know, reconning and finding out what's wrong, and then getting the proper teams involved to, you know, come to a resolution. So on some days it can be more involved than others, but, you know, it varies, man. There's so many points of contact, from defining what a customer needs, and our customers usually some front end management that's connected to maybe a call center associate or a customer's credit card account, you know, anything that kind of falls within that sphere, and being able to define what they need, build it, and then support it. Anything in that realm is kind of what would fall in my lap on a daily basis. But also, I mean, apart from just the technical side, you have, you know, teammates that need mentorship. You have managers that are if you built that relationship, built that rapport, and giving yourself a, I guess I won't say a good name, but a reliable name in your field, man, then you can go in and be a go-to person, so to speak. So there are other things that begin to come into your world, man. So other skills that you will either build or that you have that you can enhance, right? Like leadership, management, time management, communication, all kinds of different things that come in. So it's more, I met a lot of developers that can't evolve. So one kudos that I always get, I don't want to, you know, sound boastful, but I always get this, being able to match the business knowledge with the technical knowledge and being able to communicate on either side, right? Because some people you can only communicate in technical terms, and then some people can only communicate in business terms. You kind of have those two worlds. But, you know, if you can find that balance, which that's another thing that I like about it, is being able to, you know, kind of walk the middle and be not always a mediator, but, you know, I can talk development, I can talk tech, but I can also come over here and, you know, talk business and talk, you know, just common sense logic and what it means to implement the tech things that we've developed. So that's why I say what I do and, you know, my normal flows, it can be a little bit of everything, man. You know, daily meetings where we're strategizing, project planning, you know, trying to define overall goals and wins for the organization. But then once we get that done, getting down into the actual work. So I've seen and still do every day, just kind of a full circle of all of those points. But, you know, again, that goes back to what I'm saying about the flexibility of the role, being able to grow. If you're willing to grow, there's so much opportunity once you kind of get your foot in the door and, you know, kind of get your path defined. There's just really no bounds with it if that's what you really want to do long term.
Good that you mentioned communication. IT is definitely a culture for people that are in it. It's different. It's different personalities. You have a, how to describe it? I don't want to use the word arrogance, but you do have a certain level of people that think a certain way. I've had people come to me before, like, you don't seem like an IT guy, you know? And I do think that, like what you were saying, having that ability to communicate well, bridging those lines between like the business line and the IT world can really expand your ability to move through the career field. And I want to go ahead and piggyback on what you said too. You and me are similar because prior to COVID, we were doing the same things. And I think that one of the things you mentioned that I liked was it gives you the ability to be present. And I want to stop there and I want to kind of tell people how we met. And I told James this story after the fact. I didn't tell him this immediately. So we have a local recreation league. And what happens is you freeze your son, which you pretty much have him on your team, and you have, it's not a tryout, but they call it a coach's look, where they have kids come in, they do a series of drills, and then the coaches evaluate them. And then it's kind of like a serpentine draft. You kind of draft players for your team, trying to keep everything all fair. I was a coach. I was by myself. And I remember James and his son came in, and I see how nervous his son was or whatnot. But the thing about James that resonated with me was I'm a people watcher. You know, I study people. And to me, it wasn't about the skills. It wasn't about people making shots or whatnot. I want good people around me. That's how I build my club. And I watched the compassion he shared with his son. I think his son may have missed one of the layups, but how he put his arm around him, how he talked to him. I actually watched him before. And the same was with his other son who was there. And I took notes. And it was so funny because on my notes, I put, this is my assistant coach. I just knew, right? And Tony and me, man, we had a good time. I mean, we had some good seasons. Man, we vibed right off the bat. But it just attests to you as a father, you know, just being able to see that from afar. So, and this for people that can't see, this guy has an absolutely beautiful family. It's so, and we joke about this. I have 8 total. What number are you at right now?
Hey, we have 5, man. The baby just turned 1 a couple weeks ago.
Awesome, man. That is awesome. So while we're talking about kids, let's go ahead and transition into your childhood. Tell me a little bit about yourself when you were growing up. Tell me about your household.
Yeah, man. So I was raised, man, in a small country town, bro. Nothing like you know, where we are now, big city and all this asphalt jungle. So, you know, backwoods, man, small town, raised by my mom and my grandma. So kind of like you, I didn't know my father. It's a, you know, long life story behind that. But all in all, didn't know who he was. So, you know, never had a strong male figure that was, you know, just like you said, present. Constantly, there were a lot of men that poured into me at different areas and levels of my life, but not someone you could, you know, like where you know, are and where we are now, where, like I said, my kids can come in and they know I'm here. They can just come in. They can just see how I'm operating, whatever might be going on, interacting with my wife, those types of things. I didn't get that. So I'll always relate myself to, you know, Timothy in the Bible. Paul says that he was raised by his grandmother and his mom, and that's essentially it. So what they instilled in me was faith, man. So, you know, God was everything. We spent a lot of time in church. There was a lot that I didn't know at the time, but, you know, I know that was set a good, solid foundation for me long term. So that was me growing up. I had that technical mindset growing up. I believe I always loved, you know, the games. That Apple, I can't remember the model, but it was the first Mac, man. It came out when they still had. Yeah, there you go. SE. Yeah, yeah, and you know that's when the Apple still had the rainbow colors in the logo, right?
Yes.
And all you could really do was word process, and that was the coolest thing around, right? You had that GUI, and it was just new. So even then, at a young age, man, I knew I was drawn to that. I guess to that screen. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing now, but you know, drawn to that screen, man. So I always had that in the back of my mind, but I really thought I was going to be this professional athlete. Because growing up, my mom always had me in sports. I was always athletic. I wasn't really small, but I wasn't big. I could kind of fit in any sport. And as long as I worked hard, you know, that I would always do well. Baseball was a sport. I spent a lot of time playing baseball, man, on a lot of select, what we called them, all-star teams. At the time, they didn't have select or a lot of AAU going on. But I played a lot. And even in that world, man, I was always the outcast just growing up. My town wasn't necessarily, I didn't grow up, you know, in a real hard neighborhood. There were some around, but like saying the country, man, it's just like, you know, everybody's everybody. So, I mean, you have some good days, some bad days, some people, it's just people are people, but it wasn't like I only saw a lot of a certain skin color or anything like that. I never really had any bad experiences with other ethnicities. You know what I mean? Like as a kid growing up, man, everything was just kind of real chill. We were always around, you know, mostly black people, but I mean, my mom had a lot of good relationships with a lot of white people, man. And we had a lot of really good family friends that weren't black, man. So, you know, again, I kind of had a really good experience in regards to being able to relate to other people. You know, given the fact that the world, you know, sometimes not that easy for everybody. Mine was a little different in that sense. So I had some opportunities, you know what I mean, to be able to learn and see how people operated. But again, it was a very small town, so it was kind of isolated too. So growing up, that was it. Like I said, a lot of athletics. Spent a lot of time just, you know, playing outside, man. We were in the country, so a lot of time in the woods. I'm down by the creek, man. Just being outside, man, being nature, being a boy, and growing up in that sense. And then teenage years, still hadn't really learned much about my dad, man. Didn't really pursue it either. There were some situations that kind of put me to the place where, you know, it's all good. I don't really need him. It's not something that as a teenager or a kid going into a teenager that you can really control either. So that's where one of my kind of life approaches came out, is that, you know, you just control what you can control. And that's what I did at that time, and, you know, still try to do that and just focus on the things that are within what I'm capable of having the ability to change, in a sense, where I can, as far as, you know, the way I think through it, the way I approach it. So from there, man, my mom, I have a younger sister. So I grew up, we lived with my grandma for a long time, probably until I was about 13 or 14. And then we finally moved away from my mom, my sister, and I, and we stayed close. We still stayed in the same town, but we kind of got on our own. My mom had me really young, so there's an interesting story behind that with all the kids and not experiencing a lot of things that I see my kids experience. I asked my mom after one of our kids, I think it was the second youngest, because we had home births, right? So I'm going to shift and just... With our kids, man, it's been like a life-changing experience for me, right? Like, because it's shown me so much that I didn't experience growing up. For one, you know, a two-parent household, parents that love each other unconditionally, right? A true marriage, and just people that are willing to do life together. And so with that, man, with each kid, I know I've grown as a man and as an individual. And with our second youngest, we decided to do a home birth. You know, God provided a way where we were able to do it, man. We were able to afford it. And everything was just, you know, it just worked out in that way. My wife was healthy throughout the pregnancy. Pregnancy went well. But with that experience, it opened my eyes to, you know, what was it like for my mom, a young 19, 20-year-old woman back in, you know, whenever that was, 30 years ago. So, and it's like, man, so I asked her, I said, hey, you know, do you remember the story of my birth? So this kicked off some conversations and me learning about what I'm telling you about my background, my childhood. It helped me learn a lot about myself, but also her and what was going on then, man. So going back when we kind of moved out, was staying with my grandma, you know, I'm becoming a man now, 15, 16 years old, wanting to do things that I'm seeing portrayed in the world, right? Mm-hmm. You have access to music and just culture in general. So, you know, black young man, no matter where you are, the black men that you see prominently on TV or here on the radio or through media, those are commonly the ones that you're going to gravitate towards trying to emulate, right? So you have this period in life where, again, I say I don't claim to be, you know, from the hood or, you know, getting it out the mud or anything like that, man. My mom was a great mom. She took care of me. She kept me away from a lot of stuff. But again, I experienced a lot too, just for me trying to pursue things that I felt were necessary, that, you know, were good for me, things that I wanted to do. So with that, being able to look back and see some of the situations that we went through and some of the things that, you know, I kind of put her through, I know it was me just kind of, you know, having growing pains and learning through those things. But one thing, again, that always kept me home was you know, in our faith, man. And so she would always send me to different camps. She kept me doing things, kept me busy. And that was probably the main thing that kept me from getting too far gone and trying to, you know, pursue too much of what wasn't good for me. Made a lot of bad choices, but I had, thankfully, a good environment where I could kind of fail safely, if that means anything, yeah. You know, because right now, I mean, we know the stats are, you know, one mistake, man, and it ruins a lot of our young brothers' lives, man, because they don't have any type of support system. And even though I didn't have a dad, man, and I did miss a lot of good things, you know, I'm always mindful that I had it okay, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't as bad as it could have been. So my childhood, all in all, it was good, man. I don't have anything where I can say I regret it or I at least couldn't learn from it. And it, you know, I'm still dealing with issues from it today because, you know, all in all of those things that I think have molded me and shaped me and given me the ability just to, you know, be who I am and think through things. And I still have a lot that, you know, I deal with, but all in all, my childhood was something that I'm thankful for. And I don't look back and like, you know, man, I had a really bad childhood. I'm traumatized, which I may have some trauma in there that I haven't been able to get out. I don't know. But from just the high level perspective, you know what I mean? It's not a lot that I look back and say it was bad. So that's kind of the role and the flow of what coming up and growing up looked like for me.
After, what did you do after you graduated from high school?
So after high school, man, I never really had any plans, dude. I've always been to just go with the flow. And that's one thing that if I had to say anything that I probably would change a little bit. I just kind of did whatever was cool at the time, if you want to say it like that, whatever felt good to me. So right after high school, I was like, well, I need to go to college, I guess. You know, again, didn't really have any plans. Even computer science and the work that we get into wasn't at the top of my list. I think I actually went to work, locally, and just doing some odd job. I can't even remember what it was. And I think I enrolled in community college. But at the end of my senior year, I did try to pursue education. So I want to do the HBCU thing and, you know, go hard and pledge Q, man. That was a goal that I had. Like, that was the main goal. Like, who thinks about that, right? All I want to do is go to college and be a Q doll, Omega, right? But that's what I wanted to do. So I think I visited, I remember the college trip now that I'm even thinking about it. So again, I know I told you that I didn't make any notes. We're just going to go with this on the fly. So yes, I visited Norfolk State and I went to visit NC A&T out of North Carolina, right? So those are the two ones on my list. And so we were from Virginia. So in-state tuition at Norfolk State was a lot cheaper than out-of-state. But again, not having anybody to kind of lean on and talk to other than my guidance counselor, I couldn't follow through properly because money was a barrier. So if I go back to my childhood, that was another main point that kind of hindered some things. What was just access to money to be able to really do a lot of different things outside of, just basic kid things and growing up, gas and shelter and food. You have clothes and everything. All your primary core needs are taken care of, but, you know, other extracurricular stuff, it has to be, you know, park and rec, the free sports and those things. So having access to do things that were a little more expensive wasn't always something that was available. So college ended up being that thing, right? And even now, looking back, I didn't have anybody to kind of direct me, or I didn't know. I won't blame anybody. I didn't know about the financial aid, and I didn't even pursue it. So it was just choices that I made, things that I really wasn't looking for. I guess I kind of expected things to just happen. Like I said, that was that mindset of just going with the flow. So those ideas ended up falling through. I didn't go to college at that point, away from home. I just ended up enrolling in community college locally, taking some general courses, again, working, staying around, you know, the friends that you had made in high school, just keeping that same flow. I'm not really pursuing anything above and beyond, that life that I had seen everybody living in that small town that I was from, man. So, right after high school, that was it. And then I remember the kind of changing factor is I had a cousin I looked up to. He's a year older than me, actually a year and a month. but I always looked at him as a brother. And growing up, he was always there as somebody that, you know, just having another boy around. Again, I was the only boy, house full of literally women, my mom and my grandma, but also cousins, aunts, and, you know, my uncles were, you know, just doing some other things at the time. So again, he was that one boy, the other boy that I could kind of connect with. So I always looked at him, and he had enlisted in the military, in the Marines. So I was going to the community college one day, headed into class one morning, and it was a September 11th morning, 2001, right? So you walk in, they have the screens, and you see everything that's happening. And it's like, you know, I just made a decision that day. I was like, hey, man, I want to go fight. Because, you know, they use that time and that tragedy as a marketing tool, essentially, yeah. Right? You don't have the draft anymore, but you have the opportunity to kind of, you know, get some more fighting bodies. So I ended up enlisting in the Marines, man, quit college at that time. I think I finished the general studies courses I was in that semester, but I didn't consult with anyone, man. I went down to the recruiter's office, talked to him, man. He talked a good game about, you know, the job being in field artillery, and I thought it sounded cool. Again, just whatever sounded good, man, whatever was cool, I did it. I mean, I remember telling my mom, and you know, she just broke down and was crying. She didn't want me to leave and all these things, but, you know, I'm like, I'm a man. I want to do this. I'm making my own choices, blah, blah, blah. You know, you get college, you get, you know, all these learning, you know, all these things that I kind of ran through. So that was the next big step. I, you know, kind of stepped away from college and went to the Marines and did some time there. So this is, you know, like I say, the first year or two right after high school.
Okay. So I think, like I said, we've talked offline too. When I went off to school, my mother had a stroke when I was younger. So I was dealing with a lot, you know, and then I did like two and a half years of school. And you know, that's when I met my wife and started having kids. And, you know, and my wife was always, she always says, it's not how you start, you know, it's always about how you finish. You just keep drudging along. So I'm one of those guys that got my degree later in life. You know, I had to, you know, just for anyone out there to think everything just kind of lines up. Stuff usually typically doesn't line up the way you plan it. You know, but you just have to be persistent and be resilient, you know, just keep moving through. What made you decide to go back, or what was the aha moment that made you think like, maybe I should get my degree in programming? Or I didn't even ask, what is your degree in?
Yeah, so I have my undergrad in computer science with a concentration in network security.
Okay.
So kind of the hardware. And then I ended up going back and getting my master's in information systems. With no main concentration. So just it's kind of a general and computer science is what I would say. Coming home, like I said, dude, just kind of lost with no direction for all those years. I was a late bloomer, man. I was just kind of going through. So coming home, just got back into really that same place I was in before I left. Just, you know, went and got a job I don't remember where it was at the time, but doing something in a warehouse, some type of manufacturing job. And did that for the next, I don't even remember, maybe 2 or 3 years. And I haven't mentioned, you know, my wife a lot, but we met early in life. She actually lived in the same town. You can label it high school sweethearts, whatever you want to call it. But we, you know, met and dated really, really young, probably 7th, 8th grade type thing when we were really first connected. So, you know, we've been together all through everything that I'm really speaking of. After high school, we weren't dating or anything, but we got back together right before I went to the military. So maybe 6 months to a year before I went to the military. So, you know, we were together. And then after boot camp and all of that, she ended up getting, you know, pregnant. So we got married. And it's not that we got married and got pregnant. We kind of did it the wrong way, right? She got pregnant and we got married. But, you know, all in all, that worked out. So coming out of the military, I understand I still have the support, still have to do that. I think by this time we have 2 kids. I think we had 2 when I finally got out. We had 2. So when I got out, and then we had a third one. So again, you know, I know I got to do something. I'm not just going to sit back. So made some bad choices still there. Still didn't go back to school, but it came a point where we were working and my wife's sister presented an opportunity where I could, you know, we could relocate to Texas. Things, like say in the small town we were from, it's just not a lot going on for younger families, man. For the kids started getting older and we started realizing that there just, like I say, wasn't a lot for them to do apart from continuing the same dead path that we had been on, just working until you, you know, you old enough where you can't work no more, or you die working so hard. And then that's life. And then you haven't taught them or given them anything. So that aha moment was just that, being able to get the opportunity to come out to Texas. I got a job interview, basically how it ended up working out. She paid for my flight, got me out here, and I got the job. I mean, it was menial, dude. It was like $8 an hour at part-time. So it's like, we were doing okay. Both my wife and I were working when we were in Virginia. But again, it was dead end work. So going from, you know, having that income, kind of being secure in a sense, it was a false security. But having that security under you to really being left with nothing. So this is probably entering into I won't say the worst part of my life, but the most challenging part of my life. Because again, we have three kids at this point, and we're going from being okay in our minds to just really having nothing. You know, I mean, just kind of starting fresh. And that was the point in my life where it was like, okay, you know, you got to wake up and do some things differently, man. So I just started pursuing different avenues of growth as I could, just as far as I knew. My faith was still strong, man. I still had a solid relationship. It wasn't what it could be and what it has been, because I was just so much I didn't know. But staying focused on, okay, what can I do? So I decided to go back to school, and I knew it had to be something where I could do it, but still be home, be available, and all of that. So I couldn't go to class. We had one car. I didn't know anything about Texas. So it's like I can't really go anywhere. So I decided to do it all online. Mm-hmm. And it was a school that was in Virginia, so it was right before, as we were trying to transition out of Virginia, that I started. So it was really that I put a lot on my plate at the time. But again, that mindset was just that we need to do something different. You know, unfortunately, it was going back to school. I don't know if that's the best choice for everybody. But for me, I always felt like education, I know coming up how critical education was for, you know, me being afforded some of the opportunities I had. So it was just common sense. Okay, go to school. At least you can get some training. You can get, some type of validation, I guess, saying that you're capable of doing something, because, you know, nobody knows you. So just trying to pursue something better. And that's where I ended up, how I ended up back in school for the first part. And then it was just the same process going back. It was like, I need to go back to, you know, continue to advance. You see, as you start working in technology, because that job came, I started working like customer service, but you build relationships, you start networking, people begin to see who you are as a person, and people know people, right? So you start, you know, communicating, well, hey, I like to do these things. Hey, I've done this. And then they present opportunities, and then you just try to maximize and capitalize on those opportunities. And that's how it ended up happening. I ended up getting a job. I think it was Bank of America at the time, and moved on from there. And then from there, I started, my role was, you know, very junior or low level developer. And the jobs that were advancing said you had to have so many years of experience or a master's. So I was like, I don't have the experience yet, but I got kids, man, and we need to eat. And Texas is not as cheap to live in as Virginia, small town country. So pursued that, and that's how I got back into trying to get my master's degree. And it did help, essentially. I think those relationships coupled with the education, coupled with the experience, all rolled in to help, you know, advance a career from that point to kind of where it is right now.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that, man. I'm going to tell you what, I'm kind of sitting here in awe. You guys can't see my face over here. James and me have had numerous conversations. We're the type that we'd be in the middle of a basketball game. We're talking about life, you know, we're talking about our families, and we have so many similarities. We, a little bit of difference in age, but so many similarities. I learned a lot about my father later on. We have a relationship now, but he wasn't around. My grandfather passed around. That was kind of my role model. I stayed with my grandmother. My mother was, you know, we all stayed together. We had two homes kind of, like, so I went back and forth to my mom, my grandma, but we were all one unit. And same thing, she kept me in the church. She kept me in activities from Boy Scouts to whatever. We same exact situation. You know, me and my wife got pregnant first. We got married 3 months after that. So our first son was in a tux, you know, at our wedding.
Right.
And even the degree thing, you know, it's ironic because I went to Ohio State, you know, for about 3 years or so. And then, like I said, we had children. It was hard to maintain a family. And go to school, you know, we were down to one vehicle. So right before we left, you know, I started taking classes, trying to get like some of those core classes out the way at the community college, because all those credits were in the same system. And then I enrolled right before we left in a local school that allowed me to do it online so I could finish when we moved here to Texas. Kind of almost the same identical story.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
And the thing that I do want to just stake a flag in is Black love. You guys are an absolutely beautiful family. I love just seeing pictures of their family together. I mean, they just, you have somebody by your side that identifies with you. And I don't think often enough we celebrate Black love. You know, every other culture, you know, they celebrate and they encourage each other to be with each other. And I feel for some reason we don't do that. I don't really get that deep into it, but I do want to celebrate you guys. I think you're a beautiful family, stand up guy, and a really thankful for Black men like you that understands the value of being present in their children's lives.
It's likewise, man. I appreciate it.
Along those lines, we get to the near the end of this. Three questions that I ask all my guests that come on this show. And you kind of answered this before, but I'm going to go ahead and you know, ask it anyway. We all know that our past molded us. It helped us become the men that we are. But what kind of advice would the older Tony, and I always refer to him to Tony, y'all. That's his last name.
Everybody does. You're not the only one.
So what would the old James Tony, the older one, what advice would you give to your younger self that would help navigating that road be a little bit easier?
Don't be limited by what you see, right? Your perspective is everything, right? So kind of pursue what's inside of you, those dreams, that desire that you have to do something different, whatever it is. Don't be hindered and limited by your surroundings. That would be probably the main thing, because it's a perspective issue. You can't see, you have to be able to see farther than, you know, where you can see at that moment. So being, you know, forward thinking more, so pursuing, like I mentioned, those resources that I didn't feel like I might have had access to. And I've always been very reserved. So ask questions, man. Don't be afraid of, you know, feedback. Don't be concerned about what people might think. But just kind of go get it. You know what I mean? That would really be it. Don't be limited. Don't limit yourself. And don't be so concerned about what people might think.
Gotcha. I gotcha. Second question, I should say, and we discussed this as well. You know, like I said, we've talked, you know, I'm a huge proponent of strengthening one's mind, body, and spirit. Can you share, and you've shared some already, but can you share how you personally strengthen one or all of these areas?
It's one and the same, I think. Mind, body, and spirit, it's a whole, it's who we are, right? So one's lacking, then the others are going to be affected. So for me, if I break it down, mind, like I said, that quiet time, you have to be able to get it wherever it is. I mean, it doesn't have to be in the morning, but for me, that's when it's most doable, just because, you know, the kids are still asleep, the house is still quiet, and I can really just get away. So my mind, you know, for me, it's always it's critical just to make sure my relationship with God is where it should be. I'm secure and founded in Him and what I'm doing. Because otherwise, man, you can kind of get lost in the world and everything that's going on. So my mind has to be set and rooted in truth. And that way I can filter everything else through that lens. Because otherwise, I mean, we're hit with so much each day that it's unreal. And if I don't do that in the mornings, then I'm susceptible to just falling in line with the, you know, the other craziness that's going on around me. So that's my mind approach, is just making sure that I'm focused and that I'm staying concerned and on task with the main thing, which is, you know, just true life. And then my body, man, I never really had to work out a lot, but I do try to watch what I eat, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, in our community, we lack a lot of things that may not be healthy for us. So we've shifted a lot and, you know, just try to, you know, eat as many fruits and vegetables and drink as much water as we can, man. Get up and move around in this technical space. We sit a lot, Jay. So you know how that is, man. We got to make sure we get up and remaining flexible and doing things. So, you know, and coupling that with spending time with my family. So we'll go for walks. We'll do things. I'll do things with some of my kids, one-on-one, my wife. Just random things, keeping it changing, you know, saying, being flexible and not getting any stuck routine. And even going back to the mind approach, I don't want it to come off that I'm some more holier than thou person and that I do this every day, because it's not something, some religious pious tasks that I'm doing, it's, you know, when I can, as God gives me the wisdom and urges my spirit to do those things, that's when I'll make sure I'm focused and listening for him. And then, like I say, rolling into the spirit, that's it, man. Making sure that my approach and my demeanor is always welcoming as much as it can be. I mean, we're human, right? So I'm not perfect. I get angry. I get upset. I get frustrated. I get impatient. But being able to recognize when those things happen, going back to being in control, because I want to lash out. I want to return evil for evil, so to speak. But just always trying to, you know, love people, man, as much as I can, especially my family, because that's who I'm around the most. But also when I get out and encounter people, man, just trying to be welcoming. I know we're wearing masks or whatever right now, but like being able to smile at people, being able to make eye contact with people, I think that gives off a vibe of your spirit and what's inside of you. So you can see that in different people that something's off. So with the mind and body, they roll into, you know, making sure my spirit is in a good place. I'm not holding grudges. I'm releasing things. I'm talking through things with my wife or, you know, with brothers like you, man, being able to get stuff off of my chest so that it's not eating away at my soul. Because ultimately my whole thing is, you know, we have this life and we have to live it and, you know, make the most of it. I'm not necessarily trying to quote unquote live my best life now, but I'm really looking forward to maximizing what we have now so that, you know, the life to come is the best that I can have. Because that's really what I think for me. And, you know, I know everybody doesn't believe that way, but if I had to communicate, you know, one thing in regard to strengthening one or all of those areas, man, again, it goes back to what I was going to tell younger James, man, be future focused. This life is but a you know, drop in the bucket, man, but there's so much more that awaits us. And, you know, we can have another episode if we want to drop those gems. But again, that's my process of strengthening my soul.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you would like to tell young brothers or anybody that's seeking a career change?
Yeah, man, go get what you want, man. And the sense of you see somebody that's doing something that you know you want to do or something that you feel like would be good for you or fit for you, man, go get a mentorship. It is really everything. You have to get with somebody that's done it or is doing it. I mean, like we say, YouTube and all the online stuff is really great. But there's nothing better than being able to walk with somebody, man, being able to sit and talk with somebody, see how they operate, and really just like dig in. So build relationships. Don't be afraid of rejection. Don't be afraid of, criticism, you know, however it may come. But know you are, stand firm. And I mean, I always would have to tell people, for me, the communication of who you are, God has created us all, you know, for his glory. He's given us a purpose in life, man. And if you can't figure out that, then you're kind of going to be aimlessly wandering. And I know that from experience. So you have to realize that you were created, you know, on purpose, for purpose. There's something that you've been put here to do. So you got to tap into that, man. You got to figure it out and you got to be able to pass that on. Right. Because we're here for each other. Right. So making sure that you don't limit yourself. Don't let your current situation define who you are and where you are. Just be mindful that, you know, you're created for those things that he's created you for.
You know that one of my big things is my mother. It's funny some of the similarities my mother and I had. My mother used to be a choir director for 30 years. And it was so funny because I joke about she used to be so compassionate towards the kids, you know, even kids that weren't in the choir. One of my buddies, he used to get into a lot of trouble in church, you know, and I remember one time she went up, you know, she just gave him a hug, kiss on the cheek or whatnot. And when I say trouble, he got into like a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And I remember him coming to me like, man, your mom is just so nice, man. Everybody talks this, that about me, but your mom was always there. And I never understood how she did it. I got older and I turned to her in a lot of ways. So I'm really, really big on mentorship. And the whole idea behind this podcast was, how can I extend the reach beyond the kids that I coach, you know? And I think that Black men, we, for good reason, we keep a lot of stuff inside. We compartmentalize a lot. It's hard for us to be vulnerable and open up. But I'm thankful for brothers like you that are willing to, you know, just carve out some of your time to sit here and talk through some of these things. Because my goal is there may be a young man out there at the crossroads, just like you were. And I want them to be able to see that it's not your end all be all. You know, there are ways out of that, you know, and hear people that went through similar things and know that you can't overcome me and my wife was having a talk about suicide the other day, and how these young people are dealing with things that we didn't deal with. They have social media. They have these things that are impacting their mind. You know, they're seeing people. You know, I always say social media, you can create who you want to be, mm-hmm. you know, yep. but it's not healthy for some people. You know, it's not healthy to for some people to look at people looking like they're always, you know, doing this and that, and they feel inadequate in their own selves. So once again, like I said, I'm thankful that you could be real in this moment. You know, the people that I choose from this is not random. You know, I really, you know, I seek out people that I know that have went through some things and are willing to share it. So I think that you have really left us with a lot of nuggets of wisdom. And like I said, thanks again for sitting down. As we conclude this, I know personally that you have a side business that I wanted to go ahead and just kind of put out there. You want to discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, man, that'd be cool. And man, I appreciate you, dude. Just so you know, I know we, like I said, we talk, but just for the record, right, man, now you are a guy that you mentored me, and I know we probably helped each other, but man, you were a big component of us transitioning to Texas, man, and just getting that. So nah, man, I appreciate you, bro, more than you probably know. So thank you for the opportunity. But yeah, so in that technical space, man, it's overtime. Again, I came to that knowledge and desire to try to help our people, man, because one thing that we notice, and my wife and I, for the underrepresented communities, you know, Black and brown, some that may not have financial income or ability to do things like bigger or more capitalized organizations, I guess you could say, is getting our face out there in this digital world that we live in. So that comes with, you know, website development, graphic design, or just overall visual appearance, and not a personal appearance, but, you know, from a business or representation standpoint, from a brand, in those terms. So we started a web development company. That's just what we do, you know, digital strategies, web development, graphic design, anything in the digital space. We can usually handle it, or, you know, we've built relationships and have connections where we can get it done. So that's what we do. It's 8303 Solutions. It's just a conglomerate of what we're trying to do. Long-term vision is just, you know, services that just do that, just help us get our foot. And, you know, and I say Black, you know, communities, but we don't limit it to that. That's our main focus, because those are, like I say, the most underrepresented ones. They don't necessarily always have the means to compete. So we try to give them a clean face, a functional face, which helps them grow and do, you know, things in the space where others are doing it. So whatever those services end up being is where we would be. But right now we focus mainly on, you know, nonprofits, small businesses, in those communities. And we try to just do what we can. We don't really try to, you know, be this master, huge agency. We just try to stay small so that we can, you know, still represent, still be welcoming to those organizations and not overwhelm them, but also still try to do really good quality work. And that would, like I say, be the main thing. And so from that, mentorship comes in again, because there's our pastor, when we moved out here to Texas, kind of planted that seed of, hey, you can do more than what you're doing, right? So just going back to your point of, it's so critical to have someone that, you know, can speak life into you, that can give you feedback that you trust, yes. and you know that has your best interest at heart, and those types of things. So that's how we end up in the business. But that's what we do, 8303solutions.com. We're on Facebook and all that other stuff too. And then my wife, she does some teach at home type activities as well, just from what she's had experience with the kids and over the last, what, 7 or 8 years doing that. So those are kind of our business offsets, because again, in this world we live in, we can't be stuck to a 9-to-5, yes. quote unquote, because that's crazy. So
I think it's very important to have those additional streams. And little unknown fact about IT. IT is kind of competitive, you know, and I've done a little web development and design myself, and you probably have seen this yourself as well. When you look at other websites, you critique it. You know, you'll say like, yeah. They did this and that. And I can attest, I've looked at this man's work. Man, your sites are super clean, brother. I mean, they're like you said, they're functional, they're clean. He covers all bases. And I really nitpick about stuff. Like I said, I design my stuff, but I'm looking through it, you know, I'm just like, man, he covered. And I know that stuff takes some time, and it takes a meticulous eye to do some of the stuff. It's a lot, you know, people don't think they understand, you know, because there's so many templates and just basic things. Mm-hmm. This brother's building this stuff from scratch, man. I'm watching, looking at this stuff like, man, so I'm going to post all these links. And when we get finished, you send me your wife's stuff too on the website. Okay. So you guys can check this stuff out. I do think homeschooling, it used to have a stigma attached to it, but it's something that I think people should give consideration to, especially people of color. You know, we recently found a group, a couple of groups on Facebook about Black homeschoolers, a way of protecting your kids, a way of giving them the knowledge they need. You know, when I moved here, the schools are phenomenal. I will give them that. You know, my oldest is in college and he's kind of flying through. It's a little bit different for me, you know, but one thing I noticed is like when I was growing up, we had Frederick Douglass on the wall. This wasn't Black History Month. This was, you know, right. I'm in an inner city. So, of course, you know, it's a little bit different. Frederick Douglass, the Journal of Truth, Langston Hughes. And, you know, of course, you got Malcolm. You got W.E. Du Bois. It just goes on and on. Here, they don't even talk about Black History Month, you know. Mm. And we find my wife and I, we find ourselves having to, you know, instruct our kids on who they are and where they come from. And we do so much teaching at home. You know, you're like, you might as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it is a lot of benefits to it. And we have people in our family that have done it. Their kids have gone to college, excelled, doing careers. So it's a completely different world right now. I just encourage people to even consider it. I think COVID is getting people's minds wrapped around it. So I applaud you guys as parents for protecting your children, getting them on the right path as well.
Right on, man. I appreciate it. Same to you.
All right, brother. Well, you know, I kept up a lot of your time, man, but I enjoy chatting with you, man. You know, I love you like a brother. And, you know, you ever need anything, I'm here for you. And I, like I said, appreciate you again, man.
I love you, bro, man. I appreciate you.
All right, man. You take it easy.
All right. Peace.
I hope these authentic stories show different paths to success and provide mentorship. Please be sure to visit us at drjinterviews.com for additional content and social media info. Stay resilient.